On the first Sunday in Lent, our first reading is from Genesis chapter 22. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you." Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." Our second reading is from James chapter 1. "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because, having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, 'God is tempting me,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created." This is the word of the Lord. The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. They took Jesus to the high priest and all the chief priests, the elders, and the teachers of the law came together. Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. There he sat with the guards and warmed himself at the fire. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. Then some stood up and gave this false testimony against him. We heard him say, "I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days will build another, not made with hands." Yet even then, their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent and gave no answer. Again the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" "I am," said Jesus. "And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." The high priest tore his clothes. "Why do we need any more witnesses?" he asked. "You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" They all condemned him as worthy of death. Then some began to spit at him. They blindfolded him, struck him with their fist, and said, "Prophesy!" And the guards took him and beat him. This is the gospel of the Lord.
In the Old Testament lesson, we heard Abraham tell Isaac, "God himself will provide a lamb." And he has. The lamb's name is Jesus. During Lent this year, we're following the theme of the journey, starting with the supper of Jesus and the arrest of Jesus, as we talked about on Ash Wednesday. We're talking about all the things that happened in that basically a 24-hour period or less, the journey that Jesus went to that culminated with his cross, his death on the cross, and then his victory on Easter Sunday. Today we're talking about what happened, the first thing that happened to Jesus after he was arrested. He was taken to the Sanhedrin. But I want to begin by asking you a question. Have you ever been in a situation where you expected that you would get some respect, but it didn't come? Perhaps you've been aiming for a promotion at work. You've been putting in extra hours. Your attitude has been exemplary. Your production figures are higher than they've ever been. And when it came time to make a selection, you just couldn't believe who they chose. It was one thing not to choose you, but how on earth could they actually think that the person they ended up choosing would be just the right person? And you thought, unbelievable. If you're a student, perhaps you've tried out for a team or a part in a school play, but you had this sneaking suspicion that no matter how well your tryout went or your audition went, the person in charge was just going to hand it off to their favorite. I had been the associate pastor at a church for about 11 years. The senior pastor retired. And I realized, of course, that I'm not the best preacher in the world, but I also realized that God did, in fact, use my meager efforts to change people's lives by the truths that came through the messages. But when they chose the person they chose, and he was installed, and he preached the first couple of sermons, I knew a mistake had been made. I think probably most of us have at one time or another been in that place where, despite your best efforts and all your dedication, you were rejected. We've probably all been there. And if so, guess what? You're in good company. Jesus can relate. Jesus was rejected not once during his ministry, but twice, at least, in significant ways. Early in his ministry, Jesus returned to his hometown of Nazareth, and the scriptures make this sad statement. He did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. Well, apparently he did some miracles, because it says he didn't do many miracles. And why? Because of their lack of faith. Jesus was from Nazareth. It was there in the context of that situation that Jesus said the phrase you've probably heard before, that a prophet is not without honor except in his own town and in his own home. And it got even worse. Did you know that at one point, several of Jesus' brothers, stepbrothers more accurately, came to try to take Jesus home because they thought he was just a little too out there. They thought he'd flipped his wig. Even his own family members doubted his claim that he was the Messiah. So don't allow yourself to get overly distraught when the people you think would value you the most sometimes take you for granted. It is often the closest to us that don't see the growth that's taken place in you. And let me say this too. Stop to take a look at the people you know and allow yourself to see the improvements in them over time. They may not be perfect, then again, neither are you. They may not be perfect, but commend them for the growth in their lives. That would be very helpful and healthy and loving thing to do. But there was another rejection that Jesus received, a more important rejection. Jesus came into this world for a very specific purpose and reason. He came to be God's Messiah. The Messiah was the one who would come to be the deliverer. The Messiah was the one who would set people free, and that's exactly what Jesus intended to do. He came to deliver people from the consequences of their sins, and that is what he accomplished. Through his death on the cross, he took the penalty, the punishment for all the sins of all the people of the world. God would not hold people personally and eternally accountable for their many sins. No, God would look at his own Son on the cross and remember that Jesus already took our punishment. Then by rising from the dead, Jesus delivered us from the grip that death held upon us. Death had been beaten. Jesus conquered death, and he did so for himself, and he did so for every one of us who has held faith in him. Praise his name. Yes, Jesus was indeed the deliverer. But the extremely sad thing is that the Jewish leadership rejected him as God's Messiah. They wanted a different Messiah. The people wanted a Messiah that would lead an army to overthrow the Romans who held the Jews in bondage. Well, at least that's what the common Jewish person of the day hoped the Messiah would do. But when Jesus was arrested and taken and placed before this hastily thrown together meeting of the Sanhedrin, an illegal meeting of the Sanhedrin, by the way, it wasn't so much that they were looking for the Messiah to overthrow the Romans. They wanted to get rid of this rabble-rouser from Nazareth before he became a threat to their position and their privilege. The Romans, you see, tried whenever possible to allow local leadership to govern the people, so long as the local leadership was able to keep the people in line. with little or no protest or rebellion against the Romans. If the leaders weren't able to keep the citizens in line, they were replaced by others who could. So, really, what this leadership group at the time wanted was to get rid of Jesus before he incited a riot. And then they lose their places of privilege. That's what was really happening when Jesus was arrested. At least, that's what was happening from the perspective of the religious leaders of Israel. From the perspective of Jesus, something far greater was at stake and beginning to play itself out. So there Jesus was, standing before the Sanhedrin, the leadership council of the Jews, standing there on trumped-up charges. They brought in so-called witnesses. Some of them we think were even bribed to bring a certain kind of testimony. But even with their coordinated efforts, the testimonies conflicted with one another. But the high priest was shrewd. And very likely you didn't get to be high priest at that time unless you were shrewd. The high priest named Caiaphas saw that the testimony wasn't achieving its desired effect, so he came at Jesus with this. Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you? And what did Jesus respond with? Nothing. Nothing. He wasn't going to allow himself to get baited into this high priest's game. So the high priest took a different tack. He said, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" And this time Jesus does respond. This is what he said. "I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Did he respond because he was somehow drawn in or duped by the high priest? Not at all. Jesus responded because he always stands with the truth. Asked point blank if he was the Messiah and the Son of God himself, he simply could not do anything but confess the truth. Yes, I am the Messiah. And he speaks more truth. "And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." What a bold declaration! Standing in front of a council of men who could do him much harm, intended to do him much harm, to kill him if they could, he nonetheless confessed that he was God's only begotten Son, and that one day he will sit on heaven's throne with God himself. And that elicited a quick response. It's all the high priest needed. This is what followed. The high priest tore his clothes. "Why do we need any more witnesses? You've heard the blasphemy. What do you say? What do you think?" And they all condemned him as worthy of death. Again, did the high priest outsmart Jesus by tricking him into claiming a oneness with God? No! Jesus was simply proclaiming the truth. Jesus always stands with the truth. Jesus knew that he was going to die soon. His speaking the truth only served to enable the process to continue. Yes, even though Jesus knew that speaking the truth would lead to his own death, he spoke it anyway. We live in a world that increasingly doesn't know what to do with truth. We live in a world that increasingly feels free to disregard any truth that, for whatever reason, seems inconvenient. If a truth is in some way interferes with something they'd rather believe, people today frequently choose to live the lie rather than the truth. And this is especially true when it comes to God's truths. See, people don't have too much of a problem believing that 1 + 1 = 2. But when it comes to believing that there is actually a God, and that God might actually have something to say to us, well, we'd rather not. God has said, for example, thou shalt not, or you shall not have sexual relations outside of marriage. Now, God gave that command because God knew a truth. And that truth was that sexual immorality among human beings would not be a healthy thing for the people of this world. So he gave the command. And the command is regularly disregarded. God also knew another truth, that it would not be good for humankind to lust after or to covet after the things that our neighbors have. So he made a command, you shall not covet. And we do well with that one too. God has said that he is God and that we shall have no other gods before him. Because it's a truth. There are no other gods, not any real gods. And you know what? In fact, it is a fact that we break that command more than we break any of the others. Jesus said, and remember, Jesus is the second person of the Godhead, not just one of many religious teachers that the world has known. He said that no one comes to the Father except through him. Yet millions of people simply ignore this truth without even giving much of a thought to it. Don't have time for it. Too busy with living life to pay attention to the next life. You see, friends, truth matters. Truth matters. It really does. Jesus was willing to stand for the truth, die for the truth, because the truth is, he is the truth. He said, I am the way and the truth and the life. Truth. So, how have you been handling God's truths these days of your life? Have you thought of them much? Have you been living them? During the season of Lent, as we walk with Jesus the journey to his cross, we will see time and again that one of the things that was at the core of his journey was truth. Have a heart open to the Spirit of God during these days of Lent. A heart that is open to God's truths. Invite God to take his truths and implant them deeply into the fiber of your being. Invite the Spirit of God to show you when you've lived up to his truths, and invite him to show you when you've acted in ways that are contrary to his truths. Because remember, Jesus told us that truth sets us free. It sets us free from the lies and the deceptions of Satan, who would rather see us focus on anything rather than on Jesus and his teachings. Yes, the devil would rather have you obsessed with your clothes or your looks or your car or the team you support or the politics you ascribe to. Anything that supplants Jesus. Just get him out of the picture. Because if we aren't living by the truths of Jesus, we end up in some form of bondage and miss out on the life of freedom and joy and peace that Jesus wants for us. Allow the Spirit of Jesus to make you more like Jesus, the one who stands by, lives by, and commits themselves to truth. God's never changing, ever freeing truth. May God help us with this. Amen. Amen.